The Obama administration has issued long-awaited final rules designed to keep companies who routinely violate labor laws from getting federal contracts. Vendors will have to report any violations of 14 different labor laws, and eventually state laws too, directly to the Labor Department. The administration says it shouldn't be a burden for companies who are following the law, but industry groups say the government hasn't done nearly enough to make the regulations workable. Eric Crucius is an attorney in the government contracts practice at Miles and Stockbridge. He joined me to talk about the rules, including the biggest changes in the final version.
Probably the most significant one was the fact that subcontractors are now going to take their compliance history to the Department of Labor instead of going to the prime contractor directly. And from that, the Department of Labor will have essentially 3 business days to pass on whether the subcontractor is essentially worthy of doing business with the prime contractor.
And 14 labor laws involved here. What sorts of things is the government looking for?
The government's really looking for, and this was in the proposed and final guidance and rules, they're looking for more of a pattern of a contractor that's really doesn't really wish or doesn't have the resources to comply with federal labor laws. So they, of course, in those 14 are the granddaddy of them all, the Fair Labor Standards Act, as well as some that others in the audience will be familiar with in your audience, the Service Contract Act, which is now called the Service Contract Labor Standards, as well as the Davis-Bacon Act. So there's a variety of laws there, and they really demonstrate a kind of a breadth of laws that will be impacted with this rule. One thing of note is the state laws are not really in this final rule, but there is foreshadowing in the final rule that they are going to be addressing that down the road.
Let me go back to something you just said, which is companies that are willfully violating laws or don't have the resources. How big do you expect that latter category to be?
It seems like it'll be pretty big because you have a system, and the proponents of the regulation, I'm not passing on whether it's good or bad, but the proponents of the regulation always say you just have to check a box when you put in a proposal as to whether you've had a violation in the past 3 years. And I think what the proponents don't understand is what goes into checking that box, the resources the company needs to kind of go back into its compliance history and see if there are any violations. And that's especially true of larger companies that have far-flung operations, going and collecting that information, creating a system so that information could be funneled to a central place to the folks who are actually writing the proposals. But even for the small, medium-sized businesses, getting that information, understanding it, and figuring out how to send it to the government, where it's going to be publicly disclosed in SAM, is definitely a burden.
Yeah, and to that point, does it mean that you need to have been prosecuted or sanctioned in some way for some violation of labor law, or do you have to report even if you were in technical violation but nothing really happened?
It seems like all those categories would be applicable. So they look at whether there's been an administrative merits determination, a civil judgment, or an arbitral award or judgment against the contractor. And the administrative merits determination can be things that are not finally, all three categories can be things that have not been finally adjudicated. So for instance, an administrative merits determination may be an investigator came in and found a contractor has a Service Contract Act violation and requires the contractor to pay back wages. Now the contractor still has appellate rights within the Department of Labor and beyond that if they think that the investigator made a mistake. But at that point, even before those appellate rights happen, it's a reportable offense, a reportable violation under the final rule. Same thing with civil judgments. You have judgments that are not final where you may have a trial that you're a decision that you're appealing or even a temporary restraining order against the company that's subject to appeal and is being actively appealed will be a reportable violation. So it's things in all different types of processes that are not final will be reportable under this final rule.
And what happens if, you know, even inadvertently you fail to report something and the Labor Department learns about it or your contracting officer learns about it? Is there any opportunity to cure that problem or does the government just terminate your contract?
I mean, it seems like the Department of Labor and the FAR Council makes it pretty clear that that is within the purview of the contracting agency, you know, in view of the entire situation, whether they think the nondisclosure was inadvertent or whether the disclosure should have occurred. And in light of the circumstances, maybe the contractor was reckless, and that would lean towards the contracting agency terminating the contract. My concern has always been that could really form the basis of a False Claims Act violation, and not disclosing something that maybe the contractor should have disclosed or should have known about, especially in light of the recent Supreme Court decision on the False Claims Act could create a sticky wicket for contractors. So that still has to play out and remains to be seen. And, you know, between the guidance and the rule, which are both final, it's about 900 pages long. So possibly buried in there is additional guidance on that.
And the administration, back to one of your earlier points, told reporters this week that they think this is going to be, as you said, a check-the-box exercise for about 90% of companies, and only about 10% are going to have any violations that they'll need to report anyway. I don't know if that estimate sounds reasonable to you or not.
In somebody in my position, I get all the problems, of course.
Right.
So in my practice, lots of folks who I deal with have violations or issues that could lead to a violation. And large companies, you look at the large federal contractors around here, I'm not going to name any, but inevitably, even if they do everything right, they're going to have some kind of violation that would be reportable. So I just don't see multi-billion-dollar companies not having any civil judgments, not having any arbitrations, not having any administrative merits determinations against them. Just in the life of a company, mistakes are made, even if they're innocent mistakes, and those become reportable violations because there's no monetary barrier to those reports. It could be a $10, $100, $1,000 violation that has to be reportable. So I just don't see it being a 10% thing where only 10% of the companies would have to check the box. I think it's a far higher number than the administration is acknowledging.
And how much wiggle room is there in the system for an individual contracting officer to decide whether these violations rise to the level where it should actually impact an award? And you know, how do we get to some consistency in application of these rules?
Right, and that's a terrific point, and that's one of the criticisms, which was addressed in the final rules and guidance, but not really dealt with, is that there could be inconsistency across different agencies and within an agency, too, because as you noted, contracting officers have a lot of discretion to decide whether a contractor has the necessary skill and has the necessary compliance history and to perform a government contract. And that decision could differ across agencies or even within an agency, and it could lead to inconsistent decisions among contracting agencies. Now, DOL tries to remedy that by having ALCAs circle back with DOL, the agency labor compliance advisors who are deciding this, circle back with DOL and provide input as far as when they found a contractor to be not responsible or responsible or one that would require a labor compliance agreement and kind of eventually get to more of a uniform system. But it seems like a very clunky way of doing it. And I'm not necessarily confident at this point. We'll have to see where it goes. But I'm not necessarily confident at this point that we're always going to get consistent decisions across agencies or even within agencies if an agency has multiple ALCAs.
Yeah, and so if not, I mean, you unlike a suspension and debarment situation, you could wind up in a scenario where you're effectively blacklisted by one agency and not another.
Right, and that's the hot term that's used to describe this regulation, the blacklisting rule, and that's exactly correct. One agency could essentially blacklist a contractor. Another agency might find the compliance history is perfectly fine or not worthy of being blacklisted.
This calls for some speculation, but, you know, especially down at the subcontractor level, to what degree do you think we'll start to see companies saying, you know, thanks, but no thanks. I don't need to deal with this administrative burden. I don't need government work that badly.
Certainly there are some companies that only dip their toes into federal contracting, and you could see an exit of those companies from the federal space. I participated in a roundtable at George Washington University last fall, and there was a gentleman in the audience from a company that said that if this rule came into effect as it was, he planned on exiting his company from the federal space. So I think you will see that here and there. I don't know that you'll see a mass movement away from the federal space unless this regulation just works really poorly. The implementation of it is a lot clunkier than anticipated. But you also have subcontractors who don't necessarily deal directly with the federal government who are going to be subject to this and have to forward their labor compliance history to the Department of Labor, and those folks, I think, and those companies may be less willing to continue to do business with prime contractors who do business with the federal government. So there may be a situation where finding subcontractors becomes a more difficult task.
And finally, I guess my last question would be, you know, how big a lift is this going to be for the Labor Department to manage this inflow of new reporting from contractors and then make meaningful use of it? Or is there a chance that all this just kind of goes into a black hole because they can't manage the volume?
Well, Well, yeah, I think that's a terrific point. I mean, you essentially will have subcontractors across the entire government having to report their labor compliance history to the Department of Labor, and the Department of Labor essentially making a determination, not whether they're responsible, but whether their labor compliance history makes them worthy of contracting with the prime contractor. And I just don't see, unless the Labor Department gets additional funding, how they can support such an activity. I mean, it's going to be a tremendous amount of work for the Department of Labor to do. And just think about the thousands and thousands of subcontractors that are out there. And now this part doesn't take effect until next year. So perhaps they're October of next year. So perhaps they're hoping for additional funding to support that activity in upcoming budgets if they have a more favorable Congress for that.
Eric Crucius is an attorney in the government contracts practice at Miles & Stockbridge. You can read more about the Fair Pay and Safe Workplaces final rule at federalnewsradio.com, and you can share this interview with colleagues at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive. Just click share with friends.